Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm sure all of you out there just are taking a deep breath, sitting back and relaxing, because I know you are extremely busy, especially with the holiday season. And if you're a parent, you probably feel like you're meeting yourself coming and going. Well, I think that you will enjoy our guest today, Dr. David J. Pometer. He has put together a book titled Working Parents, Thriving Families. Well, a lot of people who are working today say, you have got to be kidding. We are just so swamped. How in the blue blazes can we possibly thrive? Dr. Pometer, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna, for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's a delight to have you. Now, you are, when your background is in clinical psychology, and you decided that you really wanted to work with family. You've written a lot of professional publications. You've done, well, my goodness, almost 200 professional workshops on child clinical psychology. And you've done a lot of radio, television, done a number of articles, and media is very comfortable for you. I had to chuckle when I found out that you had a neurotic dog. He's a Portuguese water dog, so he's appropriately named Dakota. But I just think that that was just a wonderful piece of humor to throw in there, especially since you're very much involved in working with the twists and turns of the mind. What is it that made you decide that you really wanted to be supportive of the modern-day family? Maybe somebody would call it the nuclear family, but why was it important to make a choice about that? Is it because you have a family of your own?
That, but just seeing a lot of needless suffering around me. I mean, you and I use the same verb a lot, and that is to empower. And I really wanted parents to feel more empowered. Tolstoy has a great line, happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. Tolstoy's quote from Anna Karenina is actually scientifically true. We've known for decades in studies around the globe exactly those parenting practices that promote resilience, happiness, and wellness in kids. But I find that that information that's in the ivory tower isn't often readily available to parents. Mm-hmm. Or it's delivered in a way that it's like watching C-SPAN. Or it's just not practical. So what I wanted to do is recognize that your average parent like me runs around with their hair on fire with not enough time to get everything done, sharing more meals in automobiles than around kitchen tables, and say, given this lifestyle that we all lead, what are the things when you're acting with intention that you really want to do that have the most scientific support? And I wanted to share that information in a way that was hopefully approachable, would make people laugh, and have them feel engaged.
I wanted to make a comment before we get into some of the points that you bring out in your book, Working Families, Working Parents, Thriving Families. Too many times, I find people will reflect in conversation, they'll say, oh, the good old days were the best old days, and I have to look at them, and I'm not that old, and I'll say, excuse me, do you have any concept what it was like for families in the 1800s, the 1900s, when mom and dad frequently were on farms? A good portion of the population survived by living on farms of their own kind. It required a level of self-sufficiency. And unless there was a grandma or grandpa or aunts or uncles that might be around, it was a real dilemma because mom was usually up from early in the morning, be it either preparing food for the guys that work out in the field. But we didn't have a lot of the conveniences today. And I think, and you can correct me, I think the problems that existed then exist today. How do you manage your time so you can have quality time and teach your children those things that they need to know so that as they come into adulthood, they'll be responsible, and I'll use your word, resilient human beings that are going to be contributors to society and not ones that are going to feel like they're entitled?
Yes, you said a lot there, and I do think there's a key word there with time, and I do think that's central. And I do a lot of work with families and my parents in my practice around the issue of having them reflect on time. We have a myth in our culture. It's set up by the premise that the time we give to our relationship is the time that's left over after we've done the stuff we have to have to get done, you know, our obligations.
Mm-hmm.
Except the myth is that there is no time left over after life's obligations have been met. That time is as mythical as the unicorn. And so we end up treating our marriages, our relationships with our kids, like cacti instead of the orchids that they are. Now, we're spending a lot of time together. We're running and gunning around together. We're doing that. There's a lot of quality time in that sense. But focused, positive, one-on-one attention, it's evaporated because we tell ourselves, listen, once I get done what I have to get done, then I'll do that. Except it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you ask around. You ask your average American, how often should you floss your teeth? How often should you change the oil in your car? What kind of exercise should you get? And people know the answers to those things. They may not do it, but they know what to do when they're acting with intention. Ask your average American, how much one-on-one time do relationships need to thrive? The question itself is foreign, never mind the answer. And that's why one of the 10 strategies I have in the book is an hour a week of this kind of positive attention that's different from quality time. And our research suggests that when parents have that kind of thing in place, the benefits accrue into midlife. You see the benefits at age 40, 50. It's that powerful of an intervention. But a lot of parents, when I share it with them, they're not familiar with it. And when we're done and they see the impact, they'll say things like, why isn't this taught on maternity units in hospitals? And I'm like, exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's really something. Now, you do have some wonderful, wonderful, down-to-earth items in your book. And I personally loved this one section called Parental Lunacy. I thought... I don't know of any parent reading this who wouldn't say, yes, that's me. And I loved what you said, and I'll quote it directly from your book. You said, I worked with parents and their children in a clinical setting for about 10 years before I had my first of 3.0 children, which always cracks me up, 3.0. And then were you to count your Portuguese water dog, which is neurotic, you'd say it's 3.5, yet your wife says it's a 4.0 because she includes you and the dog. Which I thought was really cool. I like this. I mean, this is life. We're talking about life here. And then you go into the story about your first child, your little girl. And let's face it, you guys had waited a long time to have this child. And then you went through loop-de-loops like you didn't believe you would go through. And it was really an experience for you.
It was, you know, and it, within a day of having her, I realized that we parents, we love our kids so much, it almost fractures our capacity to tolerate it. Other loves in my life had been like, and I make this analogy in the book, like being at the shore and bouncing in a wave or swimming in it as I would choose. This love for my daughter, as soon as she was born and she sucked on my finger that was in her mouth, I felt like this huge tidal wave had come along and was taking me knees over elbows wherever it would. And I remember thinking, this hurts. And I found it hard to breathe, this love that was so intense, overwhelming. And at the same time, I was simultaneously flashing to all these examples of these parents I'd worked with who seemed so vulnerable. And I got it all of a sudden. I got it. We love our kids so much, it makes us insane some of the time. So I prefer the term parent-lunatic to parent, and I refer to myself all the time in that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that it's so important that we realize that we're human beings. There is no such thing as a perfect parent. I just get really irritated when people think there is some add water and add a powdered mix of some kind, a couple of vitamin pills for extra boost, and you've got it. No, it doesn't work that way.
And it irritates me, now. It does. A brief vignette that's not in the book, but I, the first chapter, right away I start sharing my parenting mistakes. I try to do it in a humorous way, so it's worth the reader's time. But they're real mistakes I've made. And I shared that section with a colleague who read it, encouraged me to take it out. Another psychologist, she said, you know what, you might damage your credibility by talking about your own parenting mistakes. I said, no, that's exactly the problem with parenting books. That's exactly the problem with so many of them. It's this idea that I, as the author, am personifying some notion of perfection, and this is possible. Follow me around with a video camera, and I'll tell you, I'm very proud of my parenting game when I'm acting with intention, and my kids are thriving, but you will see me continue to act like an idiot. Every week, pretty much. And I don't know many people who know more about the science of parenting than me and who work harder at it. You know, but still, I'm an idiot, too. I mean, I'm always in the game. And that's what, you know, that's the question. Are we in the game? Are we fighting the fight? Are we trying to do the best that we can? And if we can, then we get the gold star.
Well, I think, too, there's this false image about the living facts of reality and life, and that, one, every kid in the world is different. They've all got their little quirks and twists, and you just go, what part of the family did this thing come from? There are those moments you'll say, I'm sorry.
Sure.
You know, I want to have a conversation with you. Do you really belong in this family? Because nothing you're doing is logical.
Right. This whole idea that we sculpt our kids, it's not supported by the science at all. There used to be theories in psychology suggesting that kids were like a lump of clay and their parents fashioned their personalities. And those theories had to be authored by men who weren't around babies very much. Because
right.
If you're around babies even a little bit, you see that a lot of that's already the spin of the genetic roulette wheel. And we're shepherds. We're shepherds, mm-hmm. and we want to be wise shepherds. But at the end of the day, we don't control our kids' outcomes. We just try to put it as much as we can before them. We try to recognize their strengths, steer them towards those, know that the vulnerabilities are there, have them think adaptively about those vulnerabilities, and say a prayer.
Right, a lot of them. You say a lot of prayers.
A lot of them. Yeah, the older they get, the stakes get greater, and the parental control goes down. But our lunacy remains the same. You know,
absolutely.
No parent's happier than their least happy child, right? So as they get older, my God, the stakes get bigger. I have less and less control, but my own wellness, my own sense of peace is still so tied to the outcomes of this other person.
That is true, and I've known a number of parents through the years that really have what I call their screaming tantrums with God periodically, because they just don't understand what's going on, and they say, sorry, you didn't give me a manual for this. I'm really uptight because this is what I'm dealing with. But the thing is that life is not a constant sameness. And life's experiences are so different. I believe one of the greatest gifts that ever can be attained, and it's not always possible, but one that can possibly be attained and to work towards, is to develop some level of open communication with kids. Of course, there's times when they're going to go through it where they're going to look at you and think, I'm sorry, but I really think you're one of the stupidest human beings on this planet, and I have no intentions in listening to you. So you have, this is especially with teenagers, and it's not abnormal. I don't know of anybody that hasn't gone through this. That's part of what is in the makeup of growing up into individuality. But like you said, we're the shepherds. We are the persons, we don't own kids. We really don't. And what we do is we try to guide them, we try to give them those supportive environments that enable them to test, to drive us crazy, to drive themselves crazy, to go through all the lumps and bumps of social interaction, which they may think, I think of times when boys meet girls, and boys and girls mature at different levels, and the boys say, you have got to be kidding, you want me to go on this situation with Lulu that your Aunt Jennifer knows? Who are you kidding? I don't even like girls. So parents have to go through this stuff. And it's we have to teach them. Social things have to be taught, social interactions. Discipline. Why is discipline so tough? Why is it in our society that in so many levels there's this entitlement attitude? And why are we afraid to let kids fall down and go bump?
I have a blog entry I wrote, Failure, colon, a critically important part of a psychologically healthy childhood. I think, you know, because when our kids hurt, we hurt worse. I think that sometimes when our kids hurt with failure, it's knee-jerk reactions can get to try to take the pain away without taking a look at whether or not the pain is actually helpful to them. You know, a wonderful little metaphor for this was on the TV show Lost, where one character was asking another to relieve him of a burden. And the character was being requested to relieve the burden, pointed to a cocoon that a caterpillar had built, and it was struggling to get out. He said, now, if I cut this and I let that caterpillar out, in some sense, in the short-term sense, it might look like I'm being merciful. I'm going to cripple this guy. And so one of the key things as parents is to appreciate that crisis equals pain plus opportunity, and that when my kid experiences a failure, when they experience a consequence of some choice they made, that there's a lot of time upside to that, too. But they have to go through the pain of it. I can't try to take that away from them. And I think the discipline question you mentioned is also very important. And it's remarkable to me how often discipline is confused with butt-kicking. And the etymology of that word is to teach. You know, one of our chief parenting goals is to have a human being, by the time they leave us, be able to do things consistently and well when they don't feel like it. You know, because in infancy and early childhood, this isn't something humans can do. Do things when they don't feel like it. And that's what discipline at its core is trying to accomplish. Because show me someone in their personal life or in their vocational life who does things only when they feel like it, and I'll show you someone who has a half-baked outcome, who's not really accomplishing much in their personal life or their vocational life. And so effective discipline can be taught in a relatively short period of time. I can't tell you the number of times parents have brought their kids with a diagnosis of oppositional defiant disorder. For me, these are kids who don't listen much of the time and have problems with anger control. And the treatment is 8 weeks, start to finish. And sometimes we're not even needing that many. And the ODD has gone away. It's gone away because these principles, these practices can be taught in a relatively short period of time. They get into the mind of a child, look out of the universe through that child, and make compliance a lavish banquet and defiance a walk in the desert. And you don't have to ask a child to choose one or the, or talk them into choosing the banquet or the desert. They'll just choose the banquet. And so effective parenting is about how to make this doing things when you don't feel like it advisable in the child's mind. And it's easy to do if you get the right kind of information.
I think your commentary on videos and games and other things, people do not have really any idea how much media can influence the mind of a child. And it actually will contribute to much of their social behavior as well. And if it's not monitored, you can have some very specific details. And I know of personal experiences and also various things that I have found out about through different professionals in this area, in their research, and they say it is so disturbing. And we often will find people will use television as a babysitter. Not everybody has the means to be able to hire somebody to be with their child 20% of the time, and our kids so frequently are so bright. They are picking up on so much, so fast, and that's normal for little ones. This is what they're supposed to do. But it is monitoring stuff, and a lot of things as an adult we don't even think about. We have to be awake to really be alert to what's in front of us. I loved your comment how it drives your kids nuts when you deliberately talk like a caricature of a psychologist, and you recommend parents do it. You've got to tell us how this was affected, because this had to do with actually watching video games.
Well, yeah, I mean, kids, it's their job to be independent. It's their job to object to their parents' rules when they feel inconvenienced. That's their job. But I don't get on the defense stand when my kids are in the role of prosecuting attorney. I don't do that. And so there's a variety of, I hope, humorous retorts that I offer to parents that they can use when their kids are trying to prosecute them. For instance, I've conditioned my kids out of making some of these complaints. A common complaint is, hey, well, how come you let Sarah, my sister, do that? And that's a common one. And I'll say to my kids, because I love her more.
Hmm.
Or they'll go, well, you know, how come my friends can get the new Xbox game and I can't? You know, you're right. The number for child welfare is on the refrigerator. Why don't you make a call, report neglect?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, now this can only happen when that contact, I do it tongue-in-cheek with the kids and they get it and they basically, you know, leave my eye line. And I think when the kids are coming at us with calm and they really are confused and they really want to know the reason for something, I'm all about explaining that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get on the defense stand and defend myself and try to pretend like their indictments are worthy of that kind of a response.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 hours a day of sedentary electronic pleasures is the recommendation of several authorities. Bodies on this issue. If a kid's doing more than 2 hours a day combined of TV, video games, other kinds of sedentary electronic pleasures, they're probably missing out on other important developmental activities. I'm telling you, my kids don't have the time to do that. Between
mm-hmm.
doing homework, the physical activity they do, the stuff we do as a family, I mean, even if I tried to get them to do 3 hours a night, it wouldn't be possible. It just
mm-hmm.
would just not be possible. And so if a kid is doing more than that, there's probably some other important developmental areas that are not getting as much attention.
I agree with you.
Related to that, Don, is I think the phenomenon of when a parent is using the TV as a babysitter, in my experience, and this goes to another intervention, that parent themselves is feeling soul weary. You know, their
mm-hmm.
own self-care, their own happiness become compromised. And two of the chapters are regard this. And at the end of every chapter, I have a wellness strategy for parents because, you know, what good am I? You know, airline stewards give great parenting advice. You know, they say if you're traveling with a child or someone weaker than you and the oxygen mask drops, put them on yourself first. There are so many households going down in flames. Oxygen masks have dropped years ago and everything's going on to the kid. And so, of course, if I'm living that way, it's understandable and even natural for me to some days turn to the TV as a babysitter. I'm so soul weary. I'm so beaten down. And so I think it's very important that we think about a cheap parenting task is a good wellness routine for myself and my relationship with my significant other.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think I just had a client this morning where we were discussing this, and this is a mature lady, and I was saying, you must take care of yourself first. And everything she had been indoctrinated through her society, association, and cultural background, everything is like she was non-existent. She wasn't to give herself any of that. And it's hard sometimes to break those habits of perception because that's what we buy into. And this goes for the gals as well as the guys. I mean, this is something we really need to pay attention to because it's important for us to be able to be on top of the game, so to speak, so that we can do it effectively. If you don't take care of yourself, nobody else is. And that's very important. I had to chuckle in your, you have a chapter on family rituals, which I think is important. It has been an observation on my part. The kids are just like dogs. This is not to insult the dogs or to insult the kids. But they like their routines. I've got a Scottish Terrier and terriers are known for being very much like cats, extremely independent. And our little Scotty is very independent, but he likes his routine. Kids are the same way. I don't care what anybody says, they like the consistency, and they thrive in that. And so the ritual of maybe reading a story every night before they go to bed, you don't have to read them 45, read them one. But there's that sense of intimacy and closeness, and it's like, wow, when I don't have that, something's wrong. And
right.
It's just something I've seen with children through any generation. What is your perception on that?
Rituals are like islands of stability in the torrential streams of our culture. You know, planes may be crashing into buildings, kids may be shooting kids in school, moms driving vans into the river with their children in them, but we still have pizza night.
Mm-hmm.
We still go to church on the weekend. We still have Pasta Friday. You know, it almost doesn't matter what the ritual is. It says to a kid that their assumptions about the stability in their life are the same, regardless of what chaos is existing in the world, regardless of what kind of changes are happening. When you look at the research on divorce adjustment, two things most strongly correlate with kid adjustment following divorce. How well the parents get along, no surprise there, and the number of changes they need to have endured. The fewer mm-hmm. the changes, the better the parents get along. So rituals are a way of infusing this idea of stability into our kids' life. I always look, when I'm doing an individual interview, it's music to my ears when a kid say, "We always." Those "we always" is, at Hanukkah, we always, you know, at Christmas, we always, New Year's, we always, music to my ears. And when I hear a family is giving up their "we always" is because of some stress, like, "We always go to Chuck E. Cheese for birthdays, but this year it just got to be too much. I know I got a family with both hands up around their head, and they're taking blows to the head from life, and they're on the ropes, and they need help. They're in crisis."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I think that it's those little rituals, and I'll tell you one that's really corny, but I've known of different families that have done this through the years, and this is with a holiday, and I'll use Christmas because that's what we're in the season for that right now, as well as a few other holidays that are evolving. But it was like Christmas Eve, the children were allowed to open up one gift. They could pick one of the smaller gifts. And then they always had apple cider with cinnamon, and they were allowed so many cookies. But it wasn't done. That was a special night, and there was a certain time. And it was something the kids looked forward to because mom was always baking cookies and there was something there. "Can you have it?" "Nope, not until Christmas Eve. This is what we do." There was a game that went on. "Gee whiz, can I do this? Can I do that?" No. "This is what it is." And there was a satisfaction. The cider seemed to taste better to the kids, and it was always served in very, very fancy glasses that they weren't allowed to use most of the time. So it was a ritual of a kind.
Exactly.
And
Donna, here's the key thing, and I think this can help parents with a lot of guilt they sometimes feel.
Mm-hmm.
My read of the scientific literature is it almost doesn't matter what the ritual is, as long as it's adaptive and consistent. So I know families sometimes feel very badly that they don't have a family meal. I tell them, listen, if you have a family meal, great. There's a lot of correlates with that. But if you don't, that's okay too, as long as you have other rituals. You know, so mm-hmm. sometimes people get caught up in the specific ritual. But we know that as long, you know, whether it's the practice of a religion or holiday rituals, seasonal rituals, weekly rituals, bedtime rituals, you know, as long as there's enough of them in there, then you have the good outcome. And you just said a few moments ago that music, you know, they always.
Mm-hmm.
As long as, but sure, dad can come home and drink a six-pack and yell, and that could be an always. But
mm-hmm.
as long as it's an adaptive thing that produces some joy or closeness or peace or satisfaction, then it has that very powerful benefit, especially when families are living in an impoverished circumstance or have a lot of stress surrounding them.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's actually comforting to the adults as well. It's almost as if, you know, let's say that you've reached a point where economically you can't have that pizza night out every Friday, but you can make your own pizza. So then,
exactly. How
do we do this? Well, what do you think goes into a pizza? Well, it's cheese and it's tomato sauce. Okay. Well, we're not going to be able to go to blankety blank pizza place, but this is what we want to do. And how about if we do it together? Well, I don't know. Well, let's try it. Do you want pizza? Yeah. So then all of a sudden, the whole family is involved, and they're doing it, and it's a good time to say, all right, this is what we're doing. Did you want to invite a friend over? What would you like to do? Let's watch a movie. Let's do something. So there's many ways that it can be done, even if you're going through difficult times.
You need to spend hardly any pocket change. I wrote a blog entry, When Santa Lives Paycheck to Paycheck, and I gave multiple ideas in there. For instance, one of the things we did in our household was Santa send my youngest this little tiny stuffed animal. It probably would have cost $1.50 for a parent to buy it. Santa mailed it to her, and with a caption saying, as I draw closer to your house, this bear will become warmer.
Oh.
That had such power for her. I actually wanted to take it to a TV show I'm on to show the audience an example of this principle, and I had to get special dispensation to be allowed to remove it from the home. Way more powerful and important. She has received some rather embarrassingly elaborate gifts from Santa. They've all got in the dustbin. This is a precious creature to her.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I know we're out of time, Dr. Perlmutter. This has just been a delight. For those of you listening, if you know of some families that really would like to get some kind of help, well, he's got a couple of websites. One is hecticparents.com, hecticparents.com. Also, helpingfamilies.com. He can be found on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And his last name is spelled Palmiter. Thank you so much for being with me today, Dr. Perlmutter. It's been just absolutely delightful.
God bless you and your mission, Donna.
Thank you so much. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. 888--0008. Well, quick like a bunny, before I get involved in some of the material I want to share with you, I am going to be appearing in Portland, Oregon this weekend on Saturday, and you can contact Cindy McGonigal for information regarding this. It is a wonderful event. We've got all kinds of activities going on, and I have sent out an email blast, but go into my website. Check it out if you're in the area. If you know of someone in the Portland area, tell them to come on out. It's a wonderful, wonderful event. Gets you ready for the holidays, and we are just going to be having a great time. We'll be doing many consultations there. Plus, there's going to be a dancer there. There's crystal bowls that are going to be played. Just wonderful performances, and I think you will have a great time. Donna Siebel here, 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to share something with you, and I just, this woman has just so much compassion and what I feel is a very, very big heart. Her name is Brenda Wade, and she made this comment. She said, as every heart heals and can fully open to love, human and divine, there will be love in every home, in every community, then love in every nation. This is the key to peace in the world. My vision and my mission include seeking to express the divine in every thought, word, and action, to know ourselves as divine allows us to recognize the divine in others. This truth, which underlies every faith, uplifts and unites all beings. Repeat this decree often. I am one with life, and the peace of life radiates through my every thought, word, and action. Wow, can you imagine the impact it would have in the world if this kind of presence was within every person? Let me read that again. I'm one with life, and the peace of life radiates through my every thought, word, and action. Now, she's saying something that has been expressed by master teachers around the world, wise people from around the world. And we live in a world at this time that is so filled with turmoil and anger and frustration and misery and little pockets of attitudes that maybe have been passed along, and people aren't really thinking about what's being expressed because maybe in their part of the world that's all they can see. It is really quite significant when someone takes the time to think through dictates, decrees, dogmas, whatever term you want to use, that have been put upon them, and ask themselves, is this the real thing? And I think part of being an adult is making sure that we make it okay to let go of that which doesn't serve our needs. I think of a gentleman, his first name was Ezeel, the Brigadier General. And in his life experience, he went through a period of extreme bigotry, saw so much in his life that really demeaned him in many, many ways. Then he went into the Marines and began to realize that the lines drawn that created bigotry, hate, and a lot of misery really were lines that had been drawn by people. They really didn't exist. They didn't have to exist. And he grew up and out and away from that kind of environment that had been so very much present in his world. Now, one might ask, how does someone step away from that? Well, it's a process of being open to new ideas, new concepts, and asking yourself, where do you want to be put in the positioning of responsibility? How much blame are you willing to let go, and how much are you willing to accept your own potentiality for making your life the way it can be? Nobody's exempt from pain and suffering. Nobody. It's going to hit you one time or another. That's just what life is all about. Life is about growing and expanding so that you can find out about your own potentiality. And if everything was comfortable and cozy, you probably wouldn't stretch an inch. It's just too comfortable. How many people have you known in life who supposedly have it all, and their minds are so closed to learning concepts, new ideas? I don't care whether they have a small IQ or a big IQ. They just don't want to get out of their little boxes. They don't want anything upsetting what they consider their norm. Well, life has a funny way about doing that. And I know my own personal experience, I had more than one situation in my life that shook me up in such a way that I had to take a positioning of personal responsibility. I could easily have turned my life over to something or someone instead of saying, no, I think I want to find out more. I want to grow into who and what I can be. It's amazing sometimes the way life's journey will take you. Sometimes in unexpected environments that in a million years, in your own level of life experience, you would never have thought would have been available to you. So as you're going around and you are enjoying this beautiful aspect of the year, the season, winter, the holidays, there is so much wonder to just pay attention to, really. But you have to be able to be receptive for it. You have something very unique and special within you that is meant to be expressed. It is meant to bloom, to blossom into its own fulfillment. You are the only person that is going to be able to do that for yourself. Nobody can do it for you. As hard as we try to follow somebody else's dictums or subservient ourselves to something or make ourselves subservient to something that somebody says this is the only way it's going to go, leave an open door for yourself. If you find it's not working, you want to be able to make an exit from whatever is not working and move towards something that will. Life is meant to be lived. It is meant to be lived with a sense of expectancy, of curiosity, a sense of wonder, because it really is a wondrous experience. So I hope you'll enjoy it to the fullest. This holiday season, very, very definitely, to me, has a magic, always has had a magic that is absolutely wonderful. There is a delightful little poem. I do not know who wrote this poem, but I think it's just absolutely charming. And it's called Guidance. This happiness wavers inside of me like a candle flame whipped by the breeze. At one moment, dazzling, distilling the gold from the air. The next moment, forked and flickering a sputter of doubt. More black smoke than flame. You have felt it too, haven't you? The shudder when the air itself betrays you. The miracle when the light, wild with the wind, stills again a beacon in your body, leading you always through the waves towards shore. Delightful poem. I do not know who the author of that delightful poem is. Okay, it's holiday season. How would you like to save money on Amazon.com? Well, I have some suggestions that were brought to my attention, and I thought I would pass it along to you. Be aware prices change. That's right. Amazon is not exempt from this. And for many of you that are on a budget, you may think, gee, I really want something. If it is not something that you have to have immediately, maybe the day after Christmas, you might find the prices will go down. Well, Amazon hasn't disclosed their particular process, but it has been found through process of observation. Prices for the goods that they have on the sites frequently change, and sometimes they'll change on a daily basis. And if you're not in a hurry, you might be able to find something that is going to be at a lesser price than you expected. Now, all you have to do, apparently, is add products you want to your shopping cart, pick the save for later option, and then check back regularly. When you see the price go down, bingo, push the button, and you've got it. Also, There are many, many Kindle books for free, all kinds of them, cookbooks, children's books, bestsellers. They're usually sold for just a couple of dollars, and many of them are free when they have limited time promotions. So if you want to find out about the latest deals, all you have to do is to sign up with pixelofinc.com. That's P-Paul, I-X-E-L-O-S-I-N-K.com. And if you don't have a Kindle, don't worry about it. There is a free app at Amazon that allows you to read those same books on your PC, your Mac, your iPod, or your mobile phone. So check it out. And you can possibly save on shipping. Now, there is a free unlimited two-day shipping for $79 a year, but if you share your membership, you can cut your cost. There are a lot of people that subscribe to Amazon Prime, and you can invite four other family members in your household to share the account. And also, there's an Amazon Mom subscribers, and you can share your positioning with other moms or other caretakers. And last but not least, you can get the biggest bargains in the Amazon's outlet store. They have items marked down as much as 80%, as well as its warehouse, and there's all kinds of refurbished and returned electronics and other goods. So check it on today's deals tab, and that's at the top of any Amazon page, and select outlet. And you can find it at warehousedeals.com. A few little tips to get you ready for the holidays and, well, hey, just about any other thing that you might be interested in finding out about. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And telephone lines are open. If you want to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. 888-627-6008. Okay, how about your 2012 winter horoscope? So we've talked about Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and Libra. Let's go for a Scorpion. Yes, those of you under the Scorpio sign, you are going to find your relationships with individuals, family, it's really going to be good. You know what? You are learning how to deal with stress, and you're going to find that you're going to start off your winter period with an awareness that you can take care of business, personal, otherwise, and can work with your stress very effectively. Money. Well, you really need to look at what you want to achieve in financial freedom. You're going to also need to make an evaluation about your career direction. You have to think about what kind of strategies you want to employ and what's going to be the best way for you to work with that money that you're bringing in so that you can effectively attain the independence that you so desire. So be open to learning about different people and the ways that they manage money and find out what's going to work best for you. Your career, you're going to have to really look at how you want to structure your actions so that your plans for your own development in the career area will achieve the results that you desire. Now, one of the things you need to do is make sure you have some time off for yourself, because you are going to need some downtime so you can keep the clarity of what you're wanting to achieve and accomplish in personal and professional life where you want it to be. Let's also go for Sagittarius. If you are under that sign, you're going to find that getting together with people that you really care about, family, friends, working associates, makes your world a much richer one. And you're also going to find that really working on your strongest attributes is going to empower you in work environments and for you to attain what means the most to you. Cash, you're going to be conservative with it, but I'll tell you what, you're not afraid to stick your neck out for opportunities, especially if you want to go into your own business. But be sure that you really have everything in order. Just don't try to wing it by the seat of your pants. Also, you're going to find that you really love to go to some new places, whether it's a new restaurant or traveling into an area of country and or different community, something that allows you to get a different idea of what possibilities are available to you. There may be a potential move that's going to be coming up, so this will empower you in a way that I think is going to make you feel like you have got a lot more choices than what you thought you had. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to share a concept with you for the holidays, because so many times we have so many goodies around that we may not always remember to have things that are what you'd call healthy. Well, why not try this? Because this is something that has good nutrition in it. It's pretty, and it also tastes good. You're going to have a little bit of the sweet, the salty, and it's just absolutely wonderful. And this is called a fruited nut and cheese wreath. And this is very visual, and it's so easy to do. You're going to need 2 cups of mixed nuts, like your cashews, walnut halves, and almonds. And maybe you like them salty, so get them salty, but you can also have them just in their natural state raw. You're going to need 1/4 cup of light corn syrup. I would say try maple syrup. I prefer maple to corn syrup, but that's my preference. 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of paprika, 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper and salt, 1/4 teaspoon each. You're going to need 1/3 cup of chopped fresh parsley, not dried. You're going to need 6 crackers. You want the buttery flavored type of crackers, and that's going to be about 1/4 cup when you crush them. So stick them in a plastic bag and just roll them with a rolling pin or mash them up. You're going to need 6 ounces of cream cheese. You want that at room temperature. And then you want a package of garlic and fine herb cheese. You want that at room temperature, too. You're going to need 1/2 teaspoon of cracked pepper, 1.5 pounds of red and or green seedless grapes, and some herb-flavored crackers will go great with this. Now, this is how easy it is. With your nuts, you mix them with your corn syrup or your maple syrup. Again, I prefer the maple. Your cinnamon, paprika, cayenne, and salt. Just mix it all up until they're evenly coated, and then coat a large nonstick skillet with cooking spray, and you heat them over medium heat, and you stir them until they're brown. 3 or 4 minutes. Take them out of the skillet, let them cool down. Then you're going to take a baking sheet with wax paper. You mix your parsley and cracker crumbs, and then a separate bowl, mix your cream cheese, both cheeses, your pepper until combined, and then take 24 grapes, Remove them from their stems. Shape about a tablespoon of cheese mixture about each grape. Roll it in the fresh parsley and put it on the baking sheet. And to make the wreath, all you have to do is take your favorite crackers and arrange them in a circle on a 12-inch platter and cut your remaining grapes into small clusters and arrange the clusters with these cheese balls and nut mixture over the crackers and leaves and have additional crackers and maybe a small butter knife so people can help themselves and put it on the crackers as well. But, oh, it's just so easy, so good, and so refreshing. Donna Sebo here. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. We'll be back with you tomorrow talking about how you can manage depression through exercise. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.